Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com or jbsba.com or jimblasingame.com. Whichever one is the best for you, easiest for you to remember and type out. We don't care which one you use. As long as you get there and as long as you take advantage of all the free resources that are on the website that are available to you to help you start, run, and grow your small business. And all of them are available free thanks to our corporate partners and my organization. And so you're welcome. So I hope you'll check it out. It's a little bit of small business heaven at jbsba.com. And by the way, I hope you'll subscribe to my free newsletter. It comes on Sunday every week by email to get you ready for the week ahead. And so I hope you'll do that. Michael Cox is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's Senior Vice President and Chief Economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. He's a longtime member of our Brain Trust. He's the author of Myths of Rich and Poor. He's our good friend. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jim. I'm really happy to be back.
It's good to have you back, as always. And you got a little anniversary coming up pretty soon, haven't you?
I do, on June the 5th.
Congratulations. First year anniversary.
Exactly.
What is that? Is that the paper mache year or the aluminum foil year? What is that?
Something not deserving of much credit, but you know, they should move the whole thing down, I think, about 25 years.
Well, I think it's going to get more expensive as each year goes by. I think it gets on up into the more expensive things after that. But anyway, happy anniversary. Michael.
Notice all those things are material goods and not services.
Exactly.
You know, I'd be perfectly happy to get an expensive massage.
Right, exactly. Michael, one of my favorite times of the year is when the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank and you and your organization produce your annual report, because it's always important information that benefits us. You guys do some great research. You provide us with some great perspectives. And as you know, you and I've been doing this now for several years. And the newest report is out, and the lead story is education, isn't it?
That is the lead thing in the economy, isn't it? We have to get better at educating our youth. And, in fact, we have to get better at lifetime learning in general, learning throughout our lives. It turns out if you go to school and you go to kindergarten and you go all the way through college and you write down the number of hours that you have spent in formal classrooms, sitting there with the teacher talking to you, doing her job or his job, and then you divide that by the number of hours that you're awake during your life, that's about 4%, only 4% of your life that you spend in formal education. So the question really is not so much how well did you do with that 4% you were in class, but how much did you differentiate yourself with the other 96% of your time being engaged in constant lifelong learning?
You know, one of my favorite stories, Michael, is the story that's told of Cato, the great Roman statesman and philosopher. And he decided at the age of about 85, he decided to learn Greek, to speak Greek. And somebody said to him, why in the world would you undertake that kind of a project at your age? He said, this is the youngest age I have.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Isn't that a great attitude?
It is. And, you know, that's important because learning does, knowledge does depreciate over your life. You'll be, you know, when you're born for the first 20, 30 years, you're going to learn things which maybe when you're older in life you don't even need. The things that our ancestors needed to know in order to be successful in life are not what we need to know. I don't know how to start a fire, for example, but if you try not having that skill 150 years ago and you're in trouble. I remember being a student in college. I didn't think I needed to know how to type. I took a typing class and made a D in it because even though I played the guitar and I'm good at with my fingers in that regard, I just didn't think I wanted to be a secretary. And only secretaries use typing, of course.
I bet you type now, don't you?
I bet I do, but not very good. I wish I had taken that class seriously. But who do you know out there who doesn't type now?
Right.
Everybody has to have it. Mm-hmm. And we have to have... So, you know, I'm an economist, and what I have learned, of course, one of the first lessons I ever learned in school was you rank things. from the most important thing to the next most important and so on, and then you draw a line where your time runs out, or if it's a case of a household budget, you draw a line where your money runs out, and there will always be things below the line that you really don't need to learn, and the thing that keeps getting moved down there, the things that keep getting moved down there are change. And you'll hear old folks talk about how, well, I don't know why our kids today don't know how to do this stuff. Well, the answer is because they've had to learn the importance of doing new things like operating computers and so on, which have become more important than the old stuff.
Right. Mike, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, folks, I'm going to ask Michael if he thinks, if his research has found that the current state of education is preparing our young people for the 21st century marketplace and for the 21st century global economy. And we're going to do that right after these messages. It's 20 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Michael Cox is our guest. He's with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. That's the Atlanta Rhythm section in the background there. Michael Cox is our guest. Mike is Senior Vice President and Chief Economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. And we're talking about the work that they've been doing this last year on understanding the role that education plays in the success of our economy, of our society, and our ability to be competitive in the United States in a global economy. Michael, and by the way, folks, you can get this report that we're talking about from the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. It's dallasfed.org, right, Mike?
Exactly. Let me tell you, there's one table in there on page 8 mm-hmm. that every parent needs to have on their coffee table, opened up to the table, because after you see this table and after you see how much money people make at various levels of education and at various stages of their life, there's no way you can escape being naive about the importance of education any longer.
It's a really dramatic graphic that you have here on page 8, Mike, and I agree with you. Folks, you can download this whole report on PDF, right?
Exactly.
Right, Mike?
DallasFed.org, and then look for the annual report.
The 2004 annual report.
You're right, and then there'll be a button for annual reports, and then 2004 is called What Do You Know?
That's right. So folks, check that out, and if nothing else, print out page 8. You know, download it and then print out page 8. And also, if you want a hard copy, they'll send you one if you ask them to. Michael, is our current state of education preparing our young people to be competitive in the 21st century economy?
In a word, no. Not yet. Not good enough. And what's happening in our school system, it really is that there's just not enough competition. If you look at how well American students do among our peers, we rank in the top 90, we rank at the 90th percentile in the fourth grade, but by the time our students, this is for science, but by the time our students get to the eighth grade, we flip to the 60th percentile, and by the time we get to the 12th grade among our peers, we've slipped to about the 25th percentile. So the longer amount of time a student spends in American schools, the worse they do.
Why is that?
Well, it's probably, like I said, we use competition to make our cell phones and every other product in our life better. We use competition to force the suppliers to be responsive to the needs of the demanders, of the buyers. But we're not using it in our school system. We don't use this. Choices become and vouchers become like evil words when they're just basic economic principles, the most
right.
important principles. So it's a crying shame that we don't use the very thing.
So what we've done is in order to not hurt anybody's feelings, we've basically cultivated mediocrity.
Exactly. We're all equally poor by these days. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look at what happens when we leave the 12th grade and we go to college, all of a sudden our students are among in the world's best college and university system. 7 out of the top 10 colleges and universities are in the United States. 20 or so out of the top 40 are in the United States. So we have these students who get whiplashed from being way behind in the 12th grade to having to needing to be, you know, at the top of at the creme de la creme when they enter the very next school. Now, the reason, my opinion, in studying this, the reason why our 12th grade schools do worse than our 4th grade schools is because, you know, if you think about a parent making an investment for their child when their child is second or third grade, it's worth a lot to move out of poor school systems into good ones because you're going to get 8 years rate of return on your money. Mm-hmm. But when you get to the 11th or 12th grade, people just throw up their hands and say, okay, what the heck, you know? These schools don't have to be that good because we're not going to move anyway. My daughter's too socially involved, and what's one more year? So it makes perfect sense. But once people can vote with their feet, which is, if you think about college, that's the first time in your life you have not, you look around all the country and say, hey, where am I going to go to school? Mm-hmm. You never do that before then for public school. You don't have that choice. And choice makes the good teachers better, and it makes the bad ones better or leave.
What do you think is the main reason why you talked about the fact that we don't have enough competition in school, but there are some structural barriers to a good education. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Structural barriers. Well, the money is not really a barrier anymore. Educators would like you to think that the barrier is that we just need more money, more money, more money. But if you look at the amount of money going to instruction as a percentage of educational spend, in other words, how much are the teachers getting? Well, they used to get 62% of the money that flows to education. Now they get 52%. So we're giving less of the money to the teachers and more to the bureaucracy. And
but hasn't it been proven that just throwing money at education doesn't create a better product?
Absolutely. No amount of money is enough unless you spend it wisely.
So what's the answer?
Well,
how do we spend it wisely?
Coming back to the competition, we need competition among our schools. Principals need to be evaluated on the basis of how well their students do. So do raises. Just think about a normal corporation. People who make money for the corporation or who make the corporation successful are the ones who get the reward.
What about competition among students?
Well, we have that. I mean, there's lots of competition among students, but there are three parts to this play. If you think three actors in this play, first are the students and families, second are the educators, and the third are the policymakers. Mm-hmm. Now, and each part, of course, is partially responsible for it. I don't want to blame all these problems on teachers, because the thing is, nobody can teach you something without your cooperation. Mm-hmm. I've been in many classrooms where I sat there and listened, and other students on the back row or some other row who were receiving the same information as I was were not taking it in. Our new bank president here, Richard Fisher, likes to say, I can explain it to you, but I can't understand it for you.
Mm-hmm. Stand by, Michael. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, when we come back, I'm going to ask Michael if he has any thoughts on whether the teachers' unions in America are contributing to education or if they're not contributing. We're going to do that right after these messages. 10 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Michael Cox is our guest. Mr. Joe Cocker. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. That's Joe Cocker, and Michael Cox is here too. Mike's a big Joe Cocker fan, aren't you, Mike?
Absolutely. he couldn't sing very well, but somehow still liked him.
He can still knock it out, though.
Yeah.
Mike is Senior Vice President, Chief Economist with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. He's the principal author of their annual report, I should say, and the new one, the current one, is the 2004 report that I encourage you to go and find out more about, folks, on the Dallas Fed website, which is dallasfed.org. It's not your grandfather's website, folks. It's a good one that I encourage you to check out for a lot of different reasons, but also to get this annual report. Michael, here's a question. Here's the controversial question of the day. How much of a help or a hindrance do you consider the teachers' unions to be in the education of our children?
Well, unions don't exist for consumers. Unions exist for the union members, for the workers, and particularly for the top of the worker pyramid, the union bosses and the union elite.
Right.
So we're not talking about it typically something that's designed to help the student, the consumer in this case is the student. So
if I could wave a magic wand, or you could wave a magic wand and abolish teachers' unions, would you do it?
I would do it, and what would be surprising to the teachers after 3 or 4 years, the remaining teachers, is how much they benefited from it in terms of having higher pay, a job to look forward to when they get up every morning, a more ruly classroom instead of unruly. All the things that they're trying to accomplish through unions, you can only accomplish through markets and competition anyway. That's the irony, is that protection doesn't make you better, it just makes you weaker and makes things fail. So
we know about that in the marketplace for sure, and I believe it's true in education as well. Michael, on page 8, this graphic that you talked about, where it identifies the disparity in income between people with less education than others, tell us about it.
Well, one of the first lessons is the importance of getting a college degree. A college degree is worth, on average, $1.1 million in lifetime income over a 40-year work life. That's the pay increment that you receive over and above a high school degree. I'm saying college.
That's not the total. That's the what above and beyond a high school education.
A high school degree makes about $1.4 million, $1.5 million. Bachelor's degree, $2.6 million. Mm-hmm. If you go on and get further education, say you go up to the master's level, you add about another $400,000. If you go all the way to getting a professional degree, you get to a lifetime income of $5.25 million. That's $5.25 million from your education. See, that's the thing. There's gold in them, our books. The secret to getting ahead these days is simply mine the books that you're handed from the first grade on.
Mm-hmm.
What we find in this report is that knowledge is a powerful, powerful lever for the lifetime learning that occurs. Every day when you're out there, you're learning something. And during our, say, 40-year work life, we're going to be out there every day finding some piece of information, some data, trying to make sense of it, trying to make sense of everything we learn. And if you go get an education first and build a framework to contain all those pieces of information you're going to get, your knowledge house, your education house is much stronger and put together much more soundly than otherwise. So, for example, if you stop with less than a ninth grade degree, if you're a junior high dropout, your income only goes up about 20% during your entire life, from $22,000 a year to $27,000 a year. Whereas if you go ahead, I'm going to go to the other end of the chart, and let's suppose you get a professional degree, your income will almost double over your lifetime, from $83,000 to $154,000. So you're able to take that knowledge and make a much prettier house with it, you might say. It's just really a startling lesson we've learned by looking at this report, and I would encourage all folks to look at it. You cannot emerge from looking at this table any longer about the value of education.
Information is becoming more valuable every day in the 21st century than assets, isn't it?
Yes, and it's particularly our ability to know what to do with that information.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, knowledge is more and more plentiful. Knowledge has become cheap. What's dear is our ability to think creatively and to imagine what we can do with the information we have.
Right.
There's a change going on in the value of education in this country to where as we have outsourcing of some analytical jobs and some formulaic intelligence jobs like back office computer help, mm-hmm. and back office call centers, imagination, creativity, people skills, and emotional intelligence are becoming more important.
Well said, Michael. I'm going to have to stop you right because we got to go. Thank you for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thank you, Joe. Enjoy.
Michael Cox, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.